Welcome to the Laravel podcast episode 55, in which I talk to Laravel creator Taylor Otwell. We learn about his backstory, where he came from, and what helped him and made him start Laravel in the first place. Stay tuned. Taylor, it's great to have you on season three of the Laravel podcast. Obviously, you've been around since the very beginning, but we're doing a little switch up here where I'm going to start doing interviews. So I'm super excited to have you as the first person whose brain I get to pick here. So I guess we can start with say hi to the people.
Hey, people. Hey, party people.
Hey, party people. So the what we're going to do here for today is I feel like, and I told you this beforehand, but I feel like there, a lot of people have talked to you about Laravel, about development, about the latest version. You know, every time a new version comes out, you know, 5.5 just came out, people want to talk about that. And maybe we'll cover that a little bit. But what I feel like we haven't talked about quite as much is the man behind the scenes kind of thing. Like, I think that there's a lot about you that people don't know. And so I first started with the questions that, you know, I've known you for years now. I feel like I know you really well, and there's still certain things I don't know about your past. But then I also asked a few folks, what are some things you really want to know about Taylor and how he works? So we're just going to kind of off the cuff, just kind of throw some of those questions at you and kind of see where it goes. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Awesome. All right. So first of all, back to the early days. When did you first have a computer in your home?
I think it was about 10 or 11, I had a computer, a 66 megahertz computer that our neighbor actually, I think, had kind of built for us, because my neighbor was a computer programmer across the street. And, you know, this was kind of back sort of in the early days of Windows, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was like Windows 3.1 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he was a early Windows programmer, and my parents had, I think, ask him to help them get a computer for us. And it had like a little megahertz readout on the front of the screen and or on the front of the tower, I guess, and it was like Windows 95.
So I'm always interested to hear from people what role kind of early access and interest in computers has for them. So, you know, you having that neighbor, was it your neighbor that kind of sparked your interest, or was it having that computer? What was it that really sparked your interest in computers when you first got into them?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't think it was necessarily the neighbor that sparked the interest. I'm not sure I even realized that my neighbor was a programmer until later. But
right.
I think I was just always interested in kind of sci-fi type stuff and geeky stuff. Like, of course, I was always like Star Wars. I liked the Jetsons cartoon when I was a kid, you know, and all the cool tech stuff they had. So
yeah.
I guess I was just always kind of drawn to futuristic tech stuff. So it was natural to sort of be into computers. And my first kind of dabbling in programming was like just plain HTML, you know, where I would make little websites about the games I liked, like Pokemon or whatever other games I was playing at the time. Just little like tips and strategy side. I remember one of the first ones I ever made, actually, which was on CompuServe, and our neighbor, that same neighbor, helped me and his son put it on CompuServe. It was a website about Civilization 2 and sort of our strategies for that game.
Yes. What's the oldest website that you still have access to? Do you know?
I don't have anything from my childhood, unfortunately. I wish I did. I wish I would have, you know, thought to take screenshots of them and stuff. But
yeah,
several of them were on GeoCities and other, like, you know, free sites like that.
Yep, I remember my GeoCities sites. The only thing I remember is that the first one that I ever built, I hosted on GeoCities, and it had a single image in it because, like, image tags were pretty new at that point. And it, so it was like basically like text about me and then a giant picture with a page curl on the corner of the picture, because the page curl was the hottest Photoshop effect or whatever.
Yeah. I always thought the little counters were cool too, that you could put
on the website. I was listening to somebody's podcast recently. I don't know who it was. And the guy who had originally created Link Exchange was on there. Do you ever do those?
Yeah, I remember those. Those were big, especially in like the Pokemon website world.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're all just waiting for one of those big sites to get a link over to us because of how the Link Exchange role played or whatever. So, it sounds like HTML is where you got started. Do you ever do any, I don't know what the right term is, but like coding, like a basic or anything like that early on, or was it until later?
Yeah, I wrote a few basic things. I also got really into like TI-83 calculator programs. Oh, yeah. Where I would write little strategy games or... you know, back then, at least in like middle school and high school, the popular thing was like that Drug Wars game.
I was just going to say Drug Wars. That was it.
So I would write games like that, either like with drugs or with other like lemonade stand type games. And I learned how to do that basically like sitting in ninth grade English. I just kind of taught myself how to program the calculator. Those were really the first real programs I wrote, I feel like.
When was your first exposure to the internet that you remember?
We had internet pretty early after I got my first computer. We had dial-up internet. Just like a 14.4 modem.
Yeah.
So that was my first exposure to the internet. I don't even remember what sites were really a thing back then. I remember mainly looking at just like video game sites and like Yahoo and stuff like that.
So when you were kind of thinking then about coding... I mean, I think a lot of us, we were just kind of figuring it out as we went. Did you think, man, this is what I want to do forever? Or is it just kind of like a fun thing and you were still, like, did you have a different plan for your life at that point?
I actually did not plan to do coding. Even when I entered college, I was doing my degree in, like, computer networking and stuff because I thought programming would be too mathematical and sort of boring. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have a good understanding of what real programming was like at a professional level. I'm not sure, like, if... You know, schools back then, even in college, I'm not sure I really got a good picture of what actual on-the-job programming is like. I always imagined it to be so, like, you know, theoretical and really hard, like calculus all the time and stuff like that. But it really, you know, at least for the kind of programming we do on the web, it doesn't tend to be that way. So I went through all of college not planning to even be a programmer.
Did you do well in, I hope you don't mind me asking, did you do well in math in like high school? Did you take calculus and everything?
Yeah, I was always like a B student in math.
Okay.
So I was just like, okay, you know, I wasn't exceptional.
Not enough that the idea of programming being very mathy made you excited about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Did you, like a different tack, did you always consider yourself someone who's going to do entrepreneurial stuff? Like at what point did you start thinking of yourself as, I'm someone who's going to start a business?
Only a few years after I'd gotten out of college and had a taste of, kind of a taste of the fact that anyone could take PHP and build an entire web application, which I didn't really realize, I guess, at the time that that was pretty possible for someone to do. And once I kind of realized that, my brain just started churning with different ideas. And even if it wasn't something that would I could do full time, but just something small to like supplement my income or whatever. So I was probably like two or three years out of college before I really started thinking that way, though.
So what was your first exposure to PHP that led you to having that experience?
So my very first exposure was in college itself. We had a class project. It was a group project. So I had two other people in my group, and we had to build a kind of an inventory tracking system for a local kind of charity. And this was sort of our final senior thing. And we were all assigned like real world projects in the community. And so we happened to get this inventory tracking thing. And so one of the guys in the group was familiar with PHP apparently and said, oh, we can use PHP for this. It's pretty easy. And I didn't really know any better. So I was like, sure, sounds good.
Right.
And that's when I really got my first exposure to PHP, even though on that project, I mainly did, you know, talking with the customer and finding out how they needed it to work and stuff like that. And then later, you know, a couple of years down the road, when I started having ideas for side projects and stuff, I had remembered that he had chosen PHP back a couple of years ago in that class project and that it was supposed to be easy or whatever. And I knew that we were able to launch the project, so it wasn't too hard apparently. So that's when I kind of revisited PHP because I hadn't actually used it very much in college. We had just, you know, my partner had chosen it as our programming language for that project.
in college when he chose that, were you doing .NET at that point, or did you get into it out of college?
No, I only did .NET once I got hired at my first, you know, actual programming job. The only programming courses I took in college were two semesters of C++. And that was it, actually. I only had those two semesters of programming, again, because I was in a networking degree, so I didn't have a lot of programming classes like a pure computer science major might have.
Right. Did you, I think I remember you told me that the .NET thing was an intentional kind of like learning the job type situation. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so the place that hired me right out of college, they came to my university, which was Arkansas Tech, and they were just hiring or interviewing students. And since they were there, you know, I decided to just go ahead and do an interview, even though I hadn't planned on being a programmer.
Right.
So I did the interview and got the job. And they immediately put you in the 6-month training program, where basically for the first 6 months of the job, you spend most of your time in class, especially for like the first 3 months. And then for the remaining 3 months, it's kind of like 50-50 in class and doing little projects and stuff. And so they actually taught me basically all of classic ASP, COBOL, JCL, which are two old, kind of old things, and some beginnings of .NET, but not a ton of it. And then I did a lot of COBOL and classic ASP, and then eventually got put on a .NET project at work and just sort of picked that up from the existing code that was like already written on the project, because I wasn't writing it from scratch at first. And so that's kind of how I kind of just taught myself .NET, you know, as I got in there, because I was already been programming for a couple of years. So picking up another language was not too difficult, since they actually wrote in VB.NET and all their classic ASP was in VB. So
right. The syntax was really similar.
Wasn't too bad.
So that actually, I wanted to ask about .NET MVC, but stepping back for a second, when you guys were writing PHP in school, was this classic PHP? Was this, I'm assuming it was 5.3 based on what I've talked to you about before, right? Was there any framework or anything?
No, there was no framework on that project that I remember. There was no, it was just like classic. From what I remember, because I actually had to put it all on a thumb drive and install it at this charity, it was just a bunch of random PHP files. There was no like real structure to it.
index.php, about.php.
Yeah, and all the...
You got all the...
All the HTML. I remember looking at the HTML and all the PHP being sort of mixed in.
Yeah. Yeah. You got your SQL queries up top, and then the end bracket, and then all of a sudden your HTML.
Yeah. But then when I came back to PHP later, it was on PHP 5.3, so...
Okay.
But again, I kind of started with... plain PHP for a few weeks and then quickly realized that I needed some structure, and that's when I used CodeIgniter for a little bit.
Okay. Now, did when you were doing .NET, was it .MVC at that point, or was it some predecessor?
I've done both. I've done .NET Web Forms, which was sort of a predecessor to .NET MVC, and I did .NET MVC, the early versions.
I had experience with Web Forms, and I never got my brain around the way it works, because if I remember right, it's basically... Rather than a router, a controller, or anything, it's really basically a form that handles its own validation. It handles its own everything, and everything is centered around this form, and then that form, and then that form.
Yeah.
And it's just a very different mental model. I know that's not a great description, but am I remembering right that that's kind of the difference between that versus .NET MVC?
Yeah, I think what they did is they took WinForms, which was sort of what we used to write desktop apps, and on WinForms, how it works, you know, if you want to do some action on a button click, when they click on a button in your desktop app, you like literally in the designer can double click the button, and it takes you to the spot in the code that's like a click event handler, and you write all of your code. And I think on WebForms, they tried to have basically... Their thought process was, wouldn't it be cool if we can kind of make the same model for the web so that all these WinForms programmers can write these dynamic web applications? So you had the same thing where you have like button click handlers in your .NET code that correspond to things on your front end. And somehow they routed that, you know, using, I don't know if it was query strings or what they were actually passing in the form, but somehow they were able to route that to the right piece of code when you click the button on your web front end. And so it felt sort of like building a WinForms app, and was really different than any other web technology I've ever used since.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the reason I was asking, is because my brother has done .NET MVC for ages, and he kind of helped me understand MVC when I first got into CodeIgniter. But I remember having written web forms before that, and it's it's such a complete, it felt like a little bit like writing, you know, classic ASP, especially if you're using VB, but then it felt a little bit like some kind of, you know, super powered jQuery, basically. Like,
yeah,
it felt
basically.
It's not like a mentality that I'm used to seeing anywhere else. So before you got back into CodeIgniter, you had had some experience with .NET MVC then.
Yeah, I had used .NET MVC, and that's why I even knew of frameworks as a concept to look for, mm-hmm. basically.
So you got a job out of school. It almost seems like it was sort of like a sponsored boot camp, basically, those first 6 months. Is that a good way to think about it? They're kind of giving you some real world stuff, but you're actually sitting in classes sponsored by the company?
Yeah, a little bit. It was all on site, and all the instructors were full-time employees that actually were, you know, in other departments, actually, and they would mm-hmm. just pull them into these training classes when they needed them. But it was a really kind of unique place. They only hire new graduates, and everyone goes through the same training program. It's sort of like they just want people fresh and wanted to sort of train them in their way of doing things rather than bring in existing programmers that are already, I guess, you know, ingrained with other ways. But
right, that you have to untrain, basically.
Yeah, it was basically one of the, I guess, the only places I've worked that only hired new graduates.
Interesting. So you're doing that, you're working in .MVC, and you have this idea that you want to do some side projects. And you mentioned that seeing your partner in that class project use PHP kind of gave you a little bit of the idea that you could do something on your own. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the mentality was and what the thought process was that led for you to, you know, have a good paying job doing .MVC that you could, you know, you could probably do that for quite a while, and saying, you know, I want to do something on this side. Like, what was the itch there?
I think part of it was having freedom to move wherever I wanted to. If it did kind of take off, then I could work from home and we could move back closer to family. Because at the time I was living like three or four hours away from the main, you know, bulk of my family, which sort of lives in one town. And so it was just going to be more freedom is what I remember, you know, to kind of live wherever we wanted to.
Yeah. So you wanted that freedom. You wanted to be able to be self-employed. And if it's anything like it was for me, and then you can tell me if I'm wrong, that there wasn't quite a significant of a culture around being an entrepreneur as it feels like there is today. There's, you know, there wasn't, you know, all these conferences about being a solo entrepreneur. I guess hearing Ian and Andre talk about it, there definitely were, you know, what are they? What's that forum they're always talking about? Business of Software.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about you. I mean, had you ever heard about any of those folks who are like really big about doing your little business, or is it just sort of something where you said, "Well, I want to do this, and I'll figure it out as I go"?
No, I didn't know anyone else doing anything like that, or I didn't go to any websites that talked about that or anything.
Yeah, same here. I'm interested to see if anything will come out during this chat, but like whether the lack of those resources helped or hurt us in various ways.
Yeah.
So you knew PHP was an option. You knew that you could ship with PHP, and you at least had the ability to compare it against some other web-based programming things. And it seemed like PHP was more viable for getting something launched working solo. And so you dug into PHP. You did a little bit of old school procedural PHP. Quickly realized you wanted to do CodeIgniter. What was the first project? Do you remember that you built with CodeIgniter?
One of the first projects I built was like this really niche thing. I had known someone that owned a book bindery, like they rebind old books, mm-hmm. and I was going to build a little system for them to take orders and keep track of orders of books they were rebinding. So it was like a very specific product for this company. I think they were based in Tulsa or something at the time, pretty close to where I was living, really.
So you built an app custom for them. Mm-hmm. You built it in CodeIgniter. I mean, what was hosting like, and what was the front end like? Do you remember any of the other technical details of what that was like?
I think I used DreamHost at the time, so it was just a shared host. Because I didn't really know how to configure my own VPS until years later, basically. I know I was on DreamHost and would just FTP the files using FileZilla because I was on Windows at the time and actually didn't even have a Mac until I started working for Userscape after Laravel had been built. So all of Laravel, the first version, was built on a cheap Windows laptop.
Huh.
Yeah, so I would just FTP all the files up. And when I first started, I was using, you know, Notepad++.
I love Notepad++.
Yeah.
A lot of good work done with Notepad++ and FileZilla.
Mm-hmm.
so you were doing that, and at some point you felt like, actually, I was going to say, at some point you felt like Codeigniter wasn't giving you what you wanted, but I actually, the reason you and I first interacted was because I was a Codeigniter developer who had started learning about IOC and DI and stuff like that, and I said, you know what I want is an IOC container for Codeigniter, and this guy, Taylor, you know, this young guy had written an IOC container for Codeigniter, and I couldn't find the code anywhere, and so I ended up DMing you or something, and you ended up saying, you know what, I just pulled it, I got rid of it, I pulled it in Laravel, you should check out Laravel. That was basically like how I first got into Laravel, and I'd followed Jeffrey at NetTuts for a while, and he'd been talking about Laravel for a bit, so that was what finally switched me over. So it sounds like before you went off on your own to do your own thing, you were trying to work in the Codeigniter ecosystem to kind of improve it. What was that like?
Yeah, so at first I had no intentions of splitting off and writing a framework, but you're right. Like one of the first projects I wrote was CI Inject or Synject or something like that. And I was actually pretty proud of that. It was actually the first reflection-based IOC container in PHP at all that I'm aware of. There was one other IOC container that was also written in 2010, a few months later. So that was because that was one of the main pieces of .NET MVC that I really liked was the auto-resolving container. And yeah. Laravel's container still works basically like that first Codeigniter container did. And then the other thing I was really interested in was a better ORM for Codeigniter. And I wanted to get those two things in. And there was a third thing. I wanted a better templating, kind of like Blade, where you have... you know, you have an extends at the top, and then you define these sections that override the parent template section, stuff like that, template inheritance. Yeah. And I remember the final straw that I couldn't really continue with Codeigniter anymore is I wanted auto-resolving dependency injection in my controller, Codeigniter controllers.
Right.
And to make that work, you really had to start editing the core files in a way that was not going to be, you know, in a nice packageable, shippable way where other people could do it. Yep. And so then I kind of hit this crossroads where I considered just forking Codeigniter and sort of making this special edition of just sort of souped up Codeigniter on steroids and giving it sort of another name.
Yeah.
Or just kind of starting fresh. And I think I just started fresh to just sort of experiment at first and then got so far along, I just kind of kept going.
Yeah.
And I know I rewrote the first version of Laravel probably a solid 5 or 6 times until I was happy with it.
What was the first thing you wrote in Laravel?
I remember writing the routing engine first. Probably the routing and the views. And I think, I don't remember exactly what I was doing for the database at the time. There was a Active Record implementation called PHP Active Record that even at that time had sort of become abandonware.
Yeah.
That was back in 2010. And then there was another couple of libraries. One was called IDIORM, or it was IDIORM, and then it had a corresponding ORM called Paris. I think the IDIORM thing was like the query builder, and Paris was the ORM.
Got it.
And actually, Eloquent was very inspired by Paris because it sort of had that model where a relationship is just a function on the model that returns a query builder. And Eloquent, of course, still works like that to this day. So Paris probably deserves quite a bit of credit for, you know, coming up with that model. And I don't think the person who wrote Paris even programs PHP anymore last time I looked. But
yeah,
I'm not sure if they're aware that Eloquent was so inspired by that.
That's really cool. So I remember the moment where I realized I had to leave Codeigniter was when I recognized that some of its inherent restrictions were forcing me into writing worse code. Like, for example, some of the ugliest stuff in my old Codeigniter apps were because I had a database models, they called it, which was really like, it was a model and a repository and like 3 other things, but you cram it all into one. And so you have methods that are just everything you could possibly imagine that would touch the database in any way would all get crammed into a single class.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you figured out enough to at least differentiate those classes by table, but that wasn't even always the case. And like you said, without view inheritance, you end up loading views and data in every controller and passing them around to each other. And you've got like a single variable that you're passing through your controller method that kind of tracks the data that's eventually going to get passed to the view. There's just a lot of things that, because of the constraints of Codeigniter, you just wrote worse code. When you started doing Laravel, I mean, so you wanted to be able to do dependency injection and all these things. How much of your mindset was, I'm going to write things that are going to make people write, you know, better code. And how much of it was, I want to do these things and I can't do these things. You know, was it a purity kind of concept? Was it a ease of use concept, or are those things all kind of tied together?
At first, I feel like it was a lot of ease of use, but also there was some purity mixed in as well because of the whole dependency injection thing, which I, you know, considered kind of a more pure approach to doing some things back then. And of course, still is a more pure approach a lot of times now. So yeah, I feel like, but also ease of use was huge too, because I wanted it to be very like Apple-esque, where it was just not really nice to use out of the box, and you didn't have to sort of do all these hacks and customizations to get it really nice that I had to do with CodeIgniter. I wanted it to be like when you unwrap Laravel, it was just sort of this nice package that you could use and was all cohesive and coherent.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit further in that for a little bit. One of the things you've talked about since the early days is that you recognize that the documentation in the community just make a really big impact on people's experience working with a framework or a library. You've referenced the fact that CodeIgniter was so successful in large part because it had great documentation. So for starters, what do you think it is that prepared you to be in a place where you could recognize that? Is it because you hadn't trained to be a programmer? Are there other experiences in your life where that made you more sensitive to those types of things? Or do you even have a sense for what that is?
I don't know. I feel like it was just sort of a low tolerance for pain and in terms of programming, because programming wasn't like a hobby for me even really back then. Like I didn't come home and program. I did other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so to have like a painful experience programming wasn't that great for me because it wasn't something I was particularly obsessed about. And so if I was going to do it at all, I wanted it to be like really enjoyable and easy yeah. to do and sort of fun. So I just had a really low threshold for any kind of pain points in the tools I was using, I think.
Yeah. It's like we always joke about the fact that a lazy programmer is a good programmer because they're going to, you know, they're going to do the one that doesn't waste time or whatever else it ends up being. So yeah, I hear that.
And even when I was at my .NET job, like I had already kind of discovered that I really enjoyed writing tools that help programmers be more productive, because I remember one of the things I did there kind of in my free time when I had a few extra minutes was I wrote this little program called WeDev in .NET that was like, the closest thing I can think of it would be like a lot worse version of Slack, but it had a chat, it had a file Dropbox where we could drop files to each other, and it had like a little status indicator of like what you were doing then. So it was like our own little instant messenger with a file share thing. Huh. And cool. So, but I really loved that project. So that was kind of my first taste of, hey, I really enjoy making developers' lives easier. And I think that was part of what drew me into Laravel, was it became this fun project to see how productive I could make a programming environment.
Yeah, I like that. One of the things that really struck me when I first started going to Laravel conferences was how many people told stories about the ways that Laravel had changed their lives. And that was something I wasn't used to. I think people kind of like, there's some, you know, some jokes around the terms of artisan and some of the other terms we, you know, we use in the Laravel world, but it's reflective of a really different approach for what the priorities and values are coming from Laravel. Like, what's the goal? And that's kind of what I was asking the question about purity versus ease of use, is it seems like developer happiness is really a very significant, like productivity and happiness are really significant kind of goals that you have there. When you were building Laravel, you started out and you wanted to kind of scratch your own itch. You wanted to make something that was, you know, it was good for you and it made, you know, you be able to do things a certain way. But, you know, you were relatively public about it. You started showing people. At what point did you start to realize this is something people are responding to, and this is something that really might be a, you know, a big player in the, you know, post CodeIgniter framework world?
I think when I was pretty far along and had basically a finished product, only then did I really decide that I would go all the way and document it. And I knew that the documentation would be huge, because I felt like that was why CodeIgniter was even popular to begin with, because you know, there was Kohana, which was another kind of CodeIgniter-esque type framework that was had some advantages and had some better features, but the documentation was so much worse that it just never really had the same steam that CodeIgniter had. And so I had picked up on that pretty early, that if I wanted Laravel to be popular, I would have to write really good documentation. And so I tried to write basically like CodeIgniter level documentation from the very first 1.0 release, because I'd seen a lot of people put stuff out there and then it was like, you know, documentation coming soon or documentation in progress. And it just, it's never right. going to get like the same reception as if it's a finished product. And so I thought it was, I thought I had a pretty productive little thing and decided, hey, I'll go ahead and document it and put it out there and see what the response is. And my kind of mentality at the time was, even if literally nobody else ever uses this, then that's fine with me, because I, at least I have something enjoyable to use when I write PHP.
Are there any like either people or moments or inflection points or whatever where you point to a thing and said, if that thing hadn't happened or if that moment hadn't happened, it would have been a completely different story?
Yeah, so there's a couple of moments. One, a big moment was, there was a point where a few PHP programmers were kind of teaming up to make this PHP framework called Fuel, and it was a few CodeIgniter people like Phil Sturgeon and Dan Horrigan and one or two other guys. And I think they were trying to kind of build the successor to CodeIgniter that was moving faster and had features that people wanted and stuff like that. And they had some pretty decent marketing pages for it and stuff like that. And I remember I had had some ideas. I was actually excited about Fuel and had some ideas that I wanted to put into Fuel. And I can't remember what they exactly were at the time. I think one of them might have been some kind of route filter type thing that ended up being in Laravel or something like that. And I had messaged one of them and said, hey, I'd really like to help out on Fuel. This is the feature I want to add or whatever. And they weren't like super interested in the feature, which is fine. Like, it's not like a knock on them. weren't interested in it. And so I was like, oh, well, okay, I guess I'll keep working on Laravel. But if they would have bit on that and been like interested in, you know, me kind of helping with Fuel a little bit in some of these things, then of course I think things could have been really different, because I would have jumped into Fuel and started adding stuff there and probably would have just started using it and kind of become invested in it. And so, yeah, that's one moment, probably the biggest moment I can think of where things could have took a really different direction. And,
interesting,
you know, because that feature wasn't really a fit for them, then I just kept working on Laravel.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, am grateful to whoever it was that rejected that feature. So, I think that it's not to say that there something else wouldn't have come along, you know, mm-hmm. but I think your life would have looked a little bit different after that point. So I think that's a good time to ask a couple questions about what's your life like today. And then, so when you were working full time, I assume it's at least a 40-hour a week job, and you were writing Laravel on the side, do you have a sense for kind of like what your hours a week were looking like? Between day job and kind of Laravel work?
Yeah, I seemed to have a lot of energy back then. Like, I would, I worked 8 to 5 and then I came home. And James, our first child, was pretty young at the time, just basically a baby when I had first started working on it. And so I would hang out with the family from 5 to 9. We were just in a little 2-bedroom apartment. It's like 900 square feet. So we were all kind of in there together pretty close.
Yeah.
And, Abigail would go to bed around 9 or 9:30, and I would actually stay up until 1 or 1:30 a lot of the times. Like, going to bed at midnight for me was like, oh, I'm going to feel great tomorrow. I went to bed at midnight. But so I would stay up until midnight, 1, sometimes 2, the majority of nights really, and work on Laravel. So I was putting in, let's see, probably 3 to 4 hours of Laravel work every night. And somehow felt pretty good, actually. I can't really seem to do that anymore. I don't know what changed, but
yeah. I mean, I wrote, I when my wife was pregnant, she would go to bed at 9 o'clock every night, and I was not happy with my day job situation. And that's when I wrote my first software as a service. And I was working 90-100 hour work weeks between my normal job and that. And so it's the same thing. There's no way I could do that right now.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did it then, back when I had that energy.
Yeah. So even when I wrote Forge, I was still working at Userscape and would stay up until midnight or 1 routinely.
Yeah.
Because that took like 6 months for me to build just in my free time.
Yeah. So at some point, you had Laravel to a point, and I don't want to go too deep in the story because that's been told before, so I want to cover things that haven't, but you got to a point where Laravel was good enough that it attracted Ian's attention. He was looking to kind of do a rebuild of Userscape, which was handled PHP from scratch, and he picked Laravel, and he hired you and said, hey, you know, you build this thing out, and you can make Laravel better so it can support our needs, and, you know, you would add a lot of features, you know, that Userscape needed, and that helped, you know, Laravel grow up in a lot of ways. So you've told that story. I think the interesting aspect that hasn't been covered before is what the shift from being Userscape plus Laravel to solo Laravel look like. So what were some of the things that you were thinking about when you were starting to make that decision, when you're starting to consider going out on your own? What was scary? What was exciting? What considerations did you have to have before you decided to go solo?
Some of the scary parts were just not knowing how much longevity Laravel as an ecosystem would have, because just Forge was out and was doing well, and I was actually making more on Forge than I was making at Userscape pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But there was still, Laravel was still relatively new. I mean, it was only 3 years old when Forge came out, so there was questions, you know, what if everyone stops using Laravel? What if a better framework comes out in 6 months and everyone's like, you know, screw Laravel, screw Forge, I'm using whatever now. So that was one of the main fears. The exciting part was that I would just have so much time to work on Laravel. Just like at the time, it was just unfathomable, you know, how much time that would be, because 40 hours a week on Laravel, you know, if I'm working just 2 or 3 hours in my free time a night is 2 weeks worth of free time, you know? So I could try stuff faster. I could experiment faster. That was the most exciting part for me.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember talking to you during that time where to me, it seemed obvious because I have a similar kind of story where I did Dreamhost, but I was running a software as a service from 2010, 2011. So I needed a VPS, and I tried managing my own Linode VPSs, and it was just awful. Like I wasn't trained in that stuff. And so I ended up paying for these super constrained hosts that didn't let you do what CodeIgniter and Laravel needed, because nothing like Forge was out there, and I just couldn't afford for my SaaS to pay a DevOps person to handle it. When Forge came along, I don't want to like be bombastic, but it really revolutionized individual developers and small teams' ability to run fully robust VPSs without having full-time DevOps people. I mean, so for me, I think it was from someone from the outside. First of all, I said, please let us pay you more money. But second of all, it was really clear that that was going to sustain. But I know that there were times where it was a little bit scary. Within your realm of comfort, I don't want you to have to say your deepest, darkest secrets, but what does make you nervous today? Are you worried about some other framework? Are you worried about PHP no longer being viable? Are you just feeling pretty good? Like what does, in the life that you have where Laravel's very popular, very stable, what's on your horizon?
Nothing makes me too nervous anymore, because even if Laravel, you know, started dying today and died a slow death over the next few years, I would have kind of secured like my future at this point. In terms of like, you know, I'm going to be able to retire with my family. The kids' college is paid for and stuff like that. And I don't have to worry about those things as much anymore. So I would just be like, okay, great. Thanks for the memories. And
cool.
I would apply to work at Titan, I guess.
No, I love it. Yes, I'm sold.
And would have to just go back to, you know, being a regular guy programmer working on projects and stuff. But I don't know, you know, so it doesn't make me too nervous, because I always try to have this mentality that Laravel obviously will not be a thing anymore, and that either because of PHP is not a thing anymore, or
right,
there's some other framework that's better or whatever. So I don't know how long that will be, but I don't really get too nervous about it, because I feel happy with sort of the what I created, the memories I made, what it did for my family, you know, for decades to come, basically. And so yeah, if it all ended tomorrow, I would be fine. Like it would be a fun ride, you know.
I love it. That's really good. And I think that that makes me so happy. I want to touch two other things, and then we might just cut it short. The two other things are in that same direction, about just what makes you happy and what gives you peace. And outside of programming. So I think the first question is, do you have any daily practices or any mantras or any things that you do to kind of center yourself and kind of just help you handle life when it's stressful or not? Just things to keep you steady, I guess.
Yeah, I try to meditate some. Can't say I do it every day, but every other day, at least, let's say, try to meditate. And, you know, for me, that's kind of a spiritual thing. But mm-hmm. for other people, it might not be. It might be more of just like a focus your thoughts kind of thing. Yeah. And also just try to keep life in perspective, like during that meditation, I guess, try to think some of those things, same thoughts where I don't want to hold like too tightly on, you know, the success of Laravel or being a popular programmer as like core to my identity, because I think that's sort of setting yourself up for a lot of pain, like in the future, because kind of all things pass away eventually.
Yeah.
So it's just a kind of a time to just sort of like focus my thoughts. Also to just think about, you know, my family, stuff like that. You know, more important stuff than programming. But I find it just kind of like de-stresses me a bit, kind of helps me focus on like what's important, and is, you know, kind of refreshing. But now, I mean, try to make time to do it, you know. I feel like as soon as we get up in the morning now with two kids, it's sort of rushing around everywhere, getting ready for school and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's kind of what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to be intentional about those things. You've talked a little bit about kind of productivity systems and how much you love Wunderlist and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How structured do you keep your life? Do you have, you know, this is the hour when I do that? Remember you've talked about starting with pull requests and issues. Do you still have some of those same structures, or is it different with Muhammad around?
Yeah, I still have some structure. It's not structured to the point that every hour of the day is structured. I'm more kind of focused like in day increments, more so than hour
right.
increments. So in Todoist, which is what I moved to after Wunderlist, which I'm really enjoying, actually, I kind of have this bullet journal approach where I only really sit in the today column of Todoist, and I have usually like five or six things that I want to do that day, and I have them in Todoist. And then I have projects that are I treat just as sort of grab bags of things I want to do at some point. So some of my projects in Todoist are, you know, actual projects I'm working on, like Laravel Horizon was, where I have all the things right. I want to do. But some of them are just like movies I want to watch or music I want to listen to or something like that. So yeah, I do keep my day fairly structured, where I start my day with pull requests and emails. But then after that, it's not so structured. So I just kind of work through my to-do list for that day, sort of as I just whatever I feel like doing next.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. Still structured. It's still structured at a daily level.
Right. In regards to the music that you're going to listen to, I'm not going to ask you to tell me the best rap album of all time, because we could do a whole podcast on that. But do you have one that, even if it's not your favorite today, has been like the longest running favorite or the most significant impact, or, you know, just like the one that you just played out like no other album or something?
So I feel like I kind of go in phases, and it's kind of funny because each Laravel release, I feel like, has had an album that like I really played
oh,
a lot
fantastic.
For that release. So I know on one of the releases I played the Views album that Drake put out quite yeah. a bit. One of the releases yeah. was The Life of Pablo from Kanye West.
Yep.
But I think one of the albums recently that I really played a lot was, I think you pronounce his name Black, even though it's spelled mm-hmm. with a six on the front. So Six Lack is what it looks like.
Yeah.
When he's kind of like a rapper singer hybrid, I guess you could say, almost more singer than rapper. Mm-hmm. But I played that album a lot when it first came out, and still play it quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. Did you like 808s and Heartbreak?
Yeah, I really like that album.
I played that out like no album for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm looking through my music. Okay, another album I played a lot was Blue Neighborhood by Troy Sivan, who's not a rapper at all. He's a singer. But that's another album I just like really wore out over the past couple of years.
Huh, I've literally never heard of it.
Okay, you should check that out.
I definitely will. That's awesome. I'll pull all this in the show notes. Okay, let's see. Oh, so I'm sure rap is one of these, but what outside of programming inspires you? Whether it's inspiring you to do good things with programming, you know, because you hear something that gives you a thing, or just inspires you in terms of your life and your family and your, you know, your entrepreneurialness or whatever else? Like, what inspires you?
Anytime I travel, I feel like I get inspired. Like, anytime I see some cool part of the world, mm-hmm. or some, you know, something really beautiful piece of scenery while I'm traveling or something, somehow that sort of inspires me to just like create cool stuff in general. And so for me, that usually translates into trying to think of cool, Laravel ideas. So travel is a big inspiration for me. Let's see, what else? You know, music is a big inspiration. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Those are the two things that jump out at me.
That's good. So I didn't prepare you for this one, so sorry. But my my friend DeRay and his podcast always asks every guest for one piece of advice that they've received that's really influenced them across their life. So is there any one piece of advice that really stands out that has had a big impact on you that you've gotten from somebody else?
One thing that comes to mind that wasn't really a piece of advice, but just more like learning, is probably from my grandfather, who just like did jobs really well. And like anything he worked on, he just made sure it was like always done really right in like a way he could be proud of. And, I don't know, I guess just kind of goes back to like an old fashioned work ethic that he must've been raised with. But I think that was really inspiring. And I actually blogged about this once, but when I worked with him, actually, when I was in college, we took care of all the lawns, like at our local church, which was a lot, 'cause they had soccer fields and, big lawns and stuff. And so, and just even with that, like he put a lot of attention to detail into that, and sort of inspired a lot of my own attention to detail and the, like, you know, going forward. So, yeah. It wasn't like a spoken piece of advice. It was more of just a thing you had to observe, but was pretty impactful.
I remember that post. I'll link it. Well, I could ask you questions for another hour, but I'm going to try and keep this one to the hour range. So I think that is pretty good for my questions for today. Is there anything else, especially along this line of questions, but just in general, that you feel like you want to talk about today?
I can't think of anything.
Okay, Taylor, this was ridiculously fun. And the part of the reason of having you as the first episode of the Laravel podcast season 3 is because everybody, you know, wants to know about you and you got a lot to say. But also, I just want to say officially, like, from me and from Dan, from the crew at Titan, from the rest of the Laravel crew, thank you for what you've done for our community. Because you really, like, when I talk about Titan, I say, you know what, like, we're creating a company that we want to take care of people, right? We want to create good jobs for people and stuff like that. And I'm, you're doing the same thing with Laravel. Like, yeah, you make money off of it, and you have the ability for yourself to create a certain kind of code and stuff like that. But your attention to providing good things for people is evident throughout this interview and just throughout everything about what you've done for Laravel. So from all of us, thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. And that's it for today.
All right. See ya.
See ya.